Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to helping farm families succeed by offering financial products and services geared specifically to agriculture and rural communities, and developing partnership-based relationships with its member owners.
From the Poet Ethanol Plant meeting in Terre Haute, Indiana, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 27th day of February. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, a mini commodity week of sorts. Our regular analyst, Wayne Nelson, will join us along with Sherman Newland and Kurt Kimmel. So stick around for that. And oh, we'll talk about, of course, the weather with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and tell you how to get your tickets for the all-day agricultural outlook, too. That is next Tuesday over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. In fact, if you haven't bought them yet, please do so right now. Don't wait. Don't tarry. Do it online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. Or dial this number, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. The All-Day Ag Outlook, this is our, I think, 28th event. Started in 1991, so the 28th annual All-Day Ag Outlook. And we'll have a dozen of our regular analysts there, including Dan Zwicker, who's coming up from Waco, Texas. He's already here in the great state of Illinois. He'll join us next week along with everybody else that you hear on the air. We'll also talk about dicamba. And if you have not heard Aaron Hager in his unfiltered version of this, that's worth coming for the day too. So we'll take up dicamba. We'll talk about corn and soybeans and marketing of those. Oh, and the CME Group and how they're changing some of their marketing plans for the year. One of those has already changed. Some over-the-counter or what they call block trades have been put in place. Does that change to volatility? We'll also take a look at variable rate storage with them and the Section 199A. Kurt Strubar of Advanced Trading, who is with the Illinois Grain and Feed Association as an alliance director, will join us. So the All-Day Ag Outlook, it's at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. That's coming up on Tuesday, March the 6th. That's next Tuesday. Buy your tickets, just $30, includes the roll and coffee in the morning from the Beef House. Plus, your Beef House meal starts at 8 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. in the Central Time. Tickets are only $30. WillAg.org to buy them now, or 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you today from outside of Terre Haute, Indiana, for Poet Bioenergy meeting. Thanks to Poet for having us down this morning to take up the conversation as it relates to agricultural commodities. On hand with us was our regular Tuesday afternoon analyst, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Also Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities. He's from Hudsonville, Illinois. And Kurt Kimmel came, too, from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. So, Wayne, let's start with you, and we're going to take just some things up that we discussed this morning as it relates to the commodity markets. Of course, we've had a pretty good rally in the soybeans. This has come on the heels of the drought in Argentina. But as I asked Kurt yesterday, I'm wondering how long this really can last, because they're starting to get to that point in the season where the combines will be running sooner rather than later. And if there's an opportunity that farmers could miss if they don't act soon enough.
Of course there's an opportunity to miss here. The question is when that opportunity is going to end. So that's why we're scaling into this market. The things we're looking at is, number one, it's been bean meal driven. Argentine farmers are not selling, number one, because of the tariff decrease as we go along. Number two, because their crop looks terrible and is decreasing every day, and farmers don't sell when they don't know what they don't have. They are the number one exporter of bean meal, so there's a shortage of bean meal in the world market right now. The U.S. is crushing at a record pace, but there will be a time, there will be a price. Is it $11? Is it $12 that the Argentine farmer will let go? There's going to be a price or a point. When will the Chinese buy and take their excess crushing and fill in that other part of the market? But that's what's going on for right now, and we don't know when that what point is, whether it's like $11, $12, or China saying, we'll do it.
Is this rally capped, Kurt, in part because of the supply of soybeans across the planet, and that would be the world supply, that in Brazil, that in the United States, and how big are those?
Well, I think it's keeping a lid on the overall rallying through here. Not only the world numbers, but here domestically, too. I mean, we got a lot of elevator-owned beans. I mean, basis is fairly wide. That suggests we still have a lot of beans out there to move yet. But when you look at the big world supply-demand balance sheet, we're in a situation where we've got, almost 100 million metric tons. And if you start taking 10, 12 million metric tons off that Argentine crop that Brazil cannot make up for, you've got carry out down to 88 or 90 million metric tons. And to really get bullish, you need the world-ending stocks down around 80 million metric tons or so. That's where we were about 3 years ago. It's still ample supply, but it's perception and logistics is kind of driving this market over here in the short term.
Opportunity for cash sales, I'm assuming, for old crops, soybeans in particular. How do you go about that? And then do you think about new crop at this time?
Yeah, it has been a blessing here. We've had a 90 cent to dollar rally in old crop beans. I think you have to take advantage of it. If you still have some old beans, you need to be looking at this and making some cash sales in through here. I mean, funds are long, about 99 to 100,000 contracts. I mean, they can continue to add to their length, maybe on up to the 150,000 range. But we're getting to a range in through here where, you know, sooner or later they're going to probably pull back. We're getting a little bit overbought. On the pullback, if you wanted to, you could buy a May or July call option to re-own some of these old crop sales if you think there's more to this rally to go to this $11 or $12 area that Wayne just mentioned. And then also with new crop, I think you got to take a little bit of an advantage of it in through here. Make some sales. I know a lot of our clients are making sales, cash sales more than anything. But, if we'd run up another 50 cents, I think you could also layer in some good put options for a decent price.
One of the other options that will be available, and we use it as an option sometimes, is crop insurance. Not such a bad price anymore as we are most of the way through the month of February. Bad price, well, better than you might have thought for both corn and soybeans.
Yeah, both numbers are better than we were looking for just a month ago. I mean, you stop and you look on January 12th, we saw that crop report, and we raised the bean carryout 165 million bushel. That's a bunch, and we've rallied since then. Like you said, it's not the number of beans in the world, it's the placement of the beans. It's just the mislocation because of the beans. If Argentina was having the record crop like Brazil is, and Brazil was having the short cutback like this, it'd be a whole different market. It's amazing that the small country has caused this good rally, but it's great for us to take advantage of. Let's use it, let's sell this rally on, at least start part of our marketing, scale into it, and then, if we need to have some courage calls, let's put them on the setback.
And at this point, we're looking at, nearly 394, 95, 96 for corn on the crop insurance number, and about 10, it was 10, and probably somewhere above that for soybeans.
Yeah, and I mean, basically above 10 and right close to $4, those are good levels to be able to insure. And most of the guys after the last couple of years, their numbers are way up there. I think we saw Montgomery County's average yield last year on corn 200 bushels. So that's, we're going to be using that number figured into the average for the county policies. So some really good numbers out there, and their guarantees are getting up there.
So it gives farmers some relief or some relief on marketing. However, they still need to go ahead and price out all of their crop at some point.
Yeah, it helps a lot to have that behind you. The banker feels good if you got crop insurance. It's a win-win situation. However, don't make that your marketing plan. Don't rely on that, because basically if you look at what happened here, if we have a decent crop, look at the prices we had last fall. You still have to market that grain. The crop insurance helps you give the comfort of going ahead and moving that cash grain. Some of the best strategies in the past is do some type of crop insurance, go ahead and market your grain, and do a replacement strategy in case we do get that weather market later on in June and July.
So I've been out with Farm Credit enough to know that when they're talking about crop insurance, they're also looking at the lending side. They like to use both of them together because, they can do both of them, and two, it makes lending a lot easier if the crop insurance is there. And they say that's because farmers can actually go ahead and market because the crop insurance is in place?
Yeah, you can. I mean, it's there to replace your sales if you don't end up with a crop. Now, how many guys actually do that? I mean, on a, you know, if you insure 75 to 85%, I mean, it's hard to get guys to actually go out there and do that, but it is a tool for that purpose. You know, like Kurt said, if you wanted to go ahead and market some of it, you know, and use some call options above it, I think that's a good idea. But I do think, you know, we're being offered some good cash prices that farmers need to take advantage of.
Both old and new crop, both corn and soybeans?
To make some cash sales? Yes, yeah. I think, you know, we do have a little bit more up in corn, in my opinion. I think maybe another 10, 15 cents is possible. So you got to start layering in some old crop corn sales into there. You know, if we can get Dease corn above that magical $4 area, I think there's a lot of sell orders up there that we got to chew through first. But if we can get above that, then, you know, the 420 mark would be a very good mark. I think guys would be getting close to $4 cash with their basis. You'd need to be doing some sales through there. Well, you know, combination of cash and maybe some future sales or put options, either one.
The All Day Ag Outlook is next week. This happens to coincide many years with a change in the marketplace. This is going back to his let's make some cash sales side. Sales. Sometimes when I'm listening to all of you, and if you all agree, I'm thinking, well, she's going the other way. Right? However, we're so early in the season, I'm wondering, and given the potential to change direction and the weight of the marketplace, though we're on the bottom, we're above the bottom end, but we're on the low end of the marketplace. I guess the sales side is important to have something covered so that you have sales made already, even if it begins to move higher.
Yeah, I mean, we're basically, depending on which customer you're talking to, 10 to 50% sold as far as new crops when they could price in a very profitable level where they can make money. You know, that was really early on the guys that are heavily sold, and just lately on the guys that had hardly anything sold. We're looking for a little setback to put some call protection on to give us the courage to sell the next rally. You know, we've got a lot of things to look ahead to see what our, you know, we're 90 and 90 as far as the crops goes, the government says, on corn and beans. We think there'll be a little bit of a split between that. You know, one's going to be trying to buy acres and look what's going on along the way. You know, we've got a lot of weather to look through too. La Nina is reducing as far as it goes, but there's a 50% chance that we could see some dry conditions, you know, especially out west that didn't get the rain that we saw in the eastern part of the Corn Belt here. And, you know, the wheat ratings are terrible. What are they going to do? Are they going to tear that up, or are we just going to have some poor wheat?
So I want to come back to you on sales one last time. This would be on soybean sales and maybe on the corn too, but basis has not been very good. It's been wide in a lot of areas. I think farmers look at it and say, this is tough for me to do. However, I'm not certain that most elevator operators would tell you that there's much intent for the basis, at least for soybeans, to start to strengthen.
No, that's probably right. With the amount of beans we have left in old crop, I don't look for basis to improve anytime soon. But if you're looking at 40 under for new crop beans, I mean, if we can get to this 1030, 1040, that's still a good price for your cash soybean sales to be making. I mean, you could do HTAs with some beans. It's a little, and then try and set your basis later if you think that's out there. But, you know, we're to a level where I think guys need to be making some sales.
Tell me a little bit about the fundamental side of this marketplace and looking forward, in particular for corn, because we have at the end of the month of March, that is, the acreage numbers coming out, and that does influence things, but yield really is the final determinant.
Yeah, the biggest thing is the March 30th acreage report. Once we get that acreage report, you kind of figure harvested acres, and the weather will affect that a little bit. But once you establish that, they'll put the trend line yield on it. Then what moves the bottom line more than anything, as everyone knows, is the yield. You start taking 5-6 bushels off corn yield, off the current USDA numbers we saw here this last week, you can take that and keep usage the same. Well, you can take carry out down in this 1.8, 1.9 area fairly quickly. So once we establish acres, the weathermen start to come in place in here and try to predict some type of yield.
Hey, Wayne, this afternoon or today sometime, the President of the United States will sit down with three senators, two secretaries from his cabinet, try to hammer out some details as it's related to the RFS. We'll hear about that later, and you and I are talking in the morning, so we haven't seen anything on it yet. What's kind of the best outcome for this, and what's a worst-case scenario?
Worst-case scenarios, we put a cap on RINs and don't do anything for the ethanol industry. The best scenario would be that we okay E15 year-round, and I'll really promote it that way so we can get some more bushels coming out there. I think that there's probably going to be something that might be proposed, but we have to go back through Congress to do this because the RFS is there. But there will probably be something proposed to help the refineries that have sort of taken a blunt here. That one that went bankrupt has brought this to the forefront. But like I say, we'd like our chip to be, if they're going to give them a chip, let's give us a chip too, and we'd like E15.
Yeah, so it's interesting to think that PES, which is out of Pennsylvania, and not a particularly big player in the marketplace, a small one, I think they owe $350 million to the United States EPA for the RINs. They had to buy these renewable identification numbers because they didn't produce enough gallons, so they had to buy them. They were fairly high price, but that problem could be eaten up pretty quickly by more usage of ethanol in the gasoline supply. That could be solved with E15, I take it. It could be solved simply by the number of miles driven in the United States, and they're back on the move upward.
Yeah, I like to see our infrastructure policy go through. The roads get better. People have been driving a lot less lately, saying, God, the roads are terrible. I mean, you know, just I think we can get good, smooth roads. We could do a little more driving. And I, like I say, the E15 would be exactly what we would like to have. You know, that could up, you know, another 10 or 15% use of ethanol in this country. And we could go to that 6 billion bushels of corn used, and we wouldn't rely so much on NAFTA and exports.
So we have actually a lot in the country that's being used domestically for corn in particular. Soybeans are on the flip side of that, where half of the crop's going out of the country. But in corn, we're grinding more than 5 billion bushels of corn for ethanol. We're using more than 5 billion bushels of the crop, and we'll have about a 14 billion bushel crop for the livestock market. Do we see numbers that will continue to chew through, in particular on the livestock side, an increasing number of bushels of corn?
Oh, yeah. You look at the cattle and feed report. You look at the hogs and pigs. You look at egg sets. The meat industry is on the boom. Per capita consumption clear across the board is on the rise in through here. Our exports stay strong as long as nothing gets messed up there. So overall, meat production in the U.S. is going to remain very, very strong. The other thing is the export news. They tried to downgrade corn exports last fall. Last fall is historically a low time frame for corn exports, but as we move in the spring, we're seeing those exports pick up. Then, of course, the ethanol. There's a huge, huge amount of ethanol starting to move out of the country. We're seeing situations where we're seeing corn ethanol go into Brazil, but sugar ethanol come out of Brazil up over into to California. The Asian market is strong. They're desiring the corn-based ethanol. The Illinois corn growers made some headwinds in here with Mexico and Japan. So it's plus, plus, plus as long as we stay down this path.
Can livestock continue to chew through the grain fast enough, in your opinion, and do we see them increasing?
I think it can. I think the USDA has underestimated the livestock usage numbers that they've been putting out. Personally, I mean, you have record number of cattle, record number of hogs, you got chickens. I think it's, in the end, it's a good way to get the surplus of corn down. I mean, you've got China coming in all the time. I mean, their society's getting to be more middle class. They're looking for more meat. You know, they're wanting that better product of food. So they're importing, you know, some beef and some pork all the time. So I think just the demand is from the livestock side is going to stay strong. You're seeing more hog houses going up all the time across the country. So I think that in itself is a good sign that, you know, the livestock numbers are going to end up pulling the surplus of corn down.
Any final word, Wayne, from you before I let all of you go for the afternoon?
Well, Todd, I think we've had a real opportunity been handed to us by the La Nina effect in Argentina. I think, you know, it's raised our bean price a dollar here. It's raised our corn price as we go up here. We've got some good numbers to insure by. And I think we're going to have some good points here to market some stuff. But we want to stay a little bit positive in thinking that when we see a setback, we might want to own a few calls.
Wayne Nelson, of course, is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, joins us here on this Tuesday. We're coming to you recorded this morning at the Poet meeting outside of Terre Haute, Indiana. Thanks for being with us. Also along with us at the meeting, and we'll be there next week too, is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Sherman Newland. He's with Risk Management Commodities from Hudsonville, Illinois. Don't forget to buy your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. We're a week away now, just 1 week away from that big event. We'll have a dozen analysts there. We'll talk about dicamba. Boy, that'll be an interesting one. If you have not heard, I'm telling you, if you have not heard Aaron Hager talk about dicamba unfiltered, you want to show up for that. And we'll take up some of the changes that have been happening in the industry, Section 199A. Kurt Strubar from Advanced Trading will help us discover what that means over the long term. No fix yet. And he'll discuss, too, because he's a member of the Illinois Grain and Feed Association, what the CME Group has already put in place as it relates to taking over-the-counter trades, what they call a block trade, and what that means to volatility, as well as one other item. They're going to change probably to variable rate storage for corn and soybeans. All of that happens next week. You can't see it unless you come over to the Beef House. The cost is just $30. Starts at 8 a.m. Central, 9 a.m. Eastern Time, Tuesday, March 6th. Buy your tickets online, willag.org, willag.org, or at 800-898-1065. When we come back, we'll talk about the weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
On this day in agricultural history in 1841, Henry W. Longfellow published his famous poem, The Village Blacksmith. The smith, a mighty man, is he, with large and sinewy hands, and the muscles of his brawny arms are as strong as iron bands. In 1879, saccharin, an artificial sweetener, was discovered by Constantine Fahlberg and Ira Remsen at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland. They discovered saccharin while working on coal tar derivatives. Saccharin is 300 times sweeter than sugar, and for years was found in products as varied as toothpaste, diet soft drinks, ice cream, beauty products, and pharmaceuticals. In 1936, on this date, Ivan Petrovich Pavlov died. Pavlov's work with dogs actually started as a study of digestion. He theorized that digestion was controlled in part by sensory inputs of sight, smell, and taste. Of course, he's best known for his work on conditioned reflex, and he did more than ring a bell. He also experimented with whistles, metronomes, gunshots, and tuning forks. And in 2001, a new outbreak of foot and mouth disease swept across a cattle and sheep farm in Devon, England, raising the fear that the disease had reached mainland Europe. The outbreak of 450 cattle, 1,300 pigs, and 250 sheep vindicated an EU decision to stop all animal movement. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. We're now joined by Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, Don, good afternoon to you. Thanks for being with us for the day.
Good to be here.
Tell me about Argentina to begin with. We should take a look at South America again. It's been the hot spot all winter long. It's remained that way. Do they have any rainfall in their forecast?
Not many areas of Argentina are looking at any really good chances of rain. The northern and western growing areas are going to get a little bit. But if you look at the vegetation map and look at areas that are stressed, in Argentina, those central and southern and northeast growing areas, look to be still drier than normal as we look at it over the next 10 days, next 14 days. So while there will be pockets of rain, the majority of the growing areas of Argentina will still be very dry.
Come back here to the United States. I think the weather has been pretty interesting recently, and the troughs are kind of neat looking, and they give us different perspectives depending on where we are in the country. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we have two very large troughs, one that's just about ready to move into and settle into the West Coast. We're going to see some much-needed rain and mountain snows in California and the far western areas. Then we're going to see another area of low pressure developing along the East Coast, the eastern and northern Great Lakes, New England. Some portions of the northern mid-Atlantic are going to be looking at some wintry weather. More rains coming to the south, central, and southeast United States. And it does look like the central and eastern Corn Belt has got more precipitation coming. And folks in the northern plains, the Dakotas, Minnesota, maybe portions of Iowa, we'll be looking later this week and the next week ahead for some wintry weather with snowy conditions, while in the winter wheat areas of Colorado, Kansas, the Panhandle areas, those areas still going to remain dry.
Hey, in the northern plains, they have been dry and remain drought-stricken in some places. This snow, as it comes this later in this, I don't know whether I want to call it late in the season for them, because they should still be getting snow, I suppose. But will it help very much to alleviate the problems that they've had?
Well, it depends on where you are. It certainly looks like some of the eastern and central northern plains, the eastern Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, are going to fare the best. Further west you go into the Dakotas, there's going to be some precipitation, but not as much. So there's a little bit of help, but they could use more.
Across the Corn Belt, who has been rejuvenated by the last set of rainfall? And I suppose some of that depends a lot on whether it actually ran off or was able to be absorbed into the soil profile.
Well, certainly the southern and eastern Corn Belt areas did the best. That's where the heaviest rains have been. The further north and west you go, the less rain has fallen. So those central and southern areas have done the best. Actually, when you look at a recent drought monitor, still pockets of dryness in those western and northwest Corn Belt areas.
Hey, Don, thanks so much for being with us for the day.
Thank you.
Don Day, of course, is with Day Weather. He is out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. Buy those tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. You can do that online at WILLAG.org or 800-898-1065. We're just 1 week away from the Beef House event. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.